Hey, everyone. Yesterday you heard from an Alabama beat writer. Today we've got an LSU beat writer. It's the College Football Podcast here. Wednesday, January 4th. We are recording this on Tuesday afternoon, January 3rd. And we have a guy with a popular first name in Baton Rouge. Les East is here. He's the LSU beat writer for The Advocate. You can follow him at Les East, and you can read him at theadvocate.com. Les, thanks for coming on. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thanks. Good to be here.
Adam Azer here with J. Darren Darst, as usual, and we are looking deeper in depth at this LSU team as they prepare for Alabama in the national championship game. And I am a little surprised that the line has switched to Alabama's favor, and now LSU is an underdog, Les. Is that strange to you?
It's a little surprising to me, but at the same time, that there seems to have been a perception all along that Alabama was the better team and that the first game didn't change that. And I understand that the second part of that, because it was such a close game, it could have gone either way. But, you know, Alabama, with that game being in Tuscaloosa, I think it was about a 4 or 5 point favorite at one point. So the perception with the betting public seems to be that Alabama's a slightly better team on a neutral field. And I guess we'll find out on Monday night whether that's true or not.
Also, I want to talk to you real quick, Les. Going back to the first game, 9-6, what do you take away from that game, and what do you think LSU has to do better?
Well, I think LSU needs to be better offensively. I think both teams would probably say that in a game in which there were no touchdowns. And LSU has changed quite a bit on offense since then. Now Jordan Jefferson is probably going to be the quarterback throughout the game, whereas the last game, Jarrett Lee, of course, started. Jefferson relieved him. Jarrett Lee threw two interceptions, which really contributed greatly to the offensive problems. So what LSU needs to do, and I think what they're focused on, is going with Jefferson from the beginning, which enables them to run the option, which they can't do with Jarrett Lee. They had some success with that. The Alabama defense, as good as it is, isn't quite as good defending the run sideline to sideline as it is between the tackles. And so I think LSU is going to want to run the option quite a bit with Jefferson and that stable of running backs to try and get the offense started and see if that sets up the play action. So if they can get a little bit of balance on offense, running and throwing it with Jefferson at the controls, I think they feel like they'll be in much better shape than they were in the first game when they were really playing from behind virtually the entire game. So I think offensive balance and consistency is really their top priority.
Well, Les, I was going to ask you if you thought they were going to run the option. I was going to ask you if Jarrett Lee was going to get in at all. But you're taking all of those questions away from me, so I'll ask you this. Are you concerned at all with this being a rematch and LSU having won the first game that Alabama has an extra motivation that LSU doesn't? I know that sounds crazy going into the national championship game. Is that a concern at all for the team, for the fans, for anyone?
Yeah, and I understand what you're saying about that, because sometimes the team that loses the first meeting seems to have a psychological edge because they have a chip on their shoulder having lost the first game. The other team maybe could be a little bit overconfident having won the first game, and all that's valid. But in this case, I think LSU has found a way to at least manufacture a chip on its shoulder because Alabama is the favorite, and they're hearing a lot of national people talking about how Alabama could have, maybe should have won the first game, maybe Alabama's the better team, what Alabama has to do to win this time. And LSU also thinks it's a little bit unfair. Hey, we took care of that business in Tuscaloosa. We beat them. You know, if they come back and they get a second shot at us, and if they win, that game means more than the one we won in their home building. So I think LSU has a chip on its shoulder and is really bothered by all of those things. And so I think emotionally and motivation-wise, I think both teams are going to be at a peak level.
Now, I was going to ask you that question because I asked the Alabama beat writer the same thing. If Alabama wins, do you see it as, okay, Alabama's the national champions, or as the LSU beat writer and some of the fan base I'm sure you've talked to, they see it as, hey, wait a second now, we beat each other once. No one's the national champion.
Yeah, well, the way I see it is if Alabama wins it, Alabama is definitely the national championship in what is obviously a flawed system.
Okay, I agree with you on that one.
Now, the wild card in all this is if LSU were to play a very good game, a very close game, and come up a little bit short, sort of like Alabama did in the first game, it's not out of the question that the AP could vote LSU number one, and you could have a split national champion. Of course, the BCS champion is going to be the one that's going to be recognized by virtually everyone, but that could stir the debate into the offseason some if the AP would recognize someone other than the BCS champion as their national champion. I think it would add more fuel to the fire with that annual debate we seem to have.
Maybe I'm crazy. Darcy, you can disagree with me, but I think if we look back at the last decade of college football, starting, let's say, the turn of the century, the two teams that stand out in public perception as the two best teams we've seen were the Miami Hurricanes and the USC Trojans when they won national championships. If LSU wins this game, goes 14-0, how do you compare them to those teams that are really looked at? I think the 0-1 Hurricanes probably more so looked at as among the best teams that have ever played college football in a single season.
Yeah, you know, that's great fodder for debate because you can look at it in so many different ways. What I would say is if LSU were to win this game and go 14-0 and beat a team of Alabama's caliber twice, have 9 victories against teams ranked in the AP Top 25, which I don't believe has ever happened before, I think you would have to say that no one in the history of college football has a better resume than LSU has. Now, you can make arguments for the Miami team and the USC team you brought up. I think you can also bring up a Nebraska team from 95 or 96
that
ran the table against a lot of ranked teams and won decisively and beat Florida, I believe, for the national championship. So you can make cases for other teams, but I don't see how you can say anybody could make a better case than LSU would have if they were to be 14-0.
Any injuries that we need to know about for LSU as they head into this game?
I don't think so. Their strong safety, Eric Reed, injured a quad muscle against Arkansas. He played and was limited against Georgia in the SEC championship and was very sore after that game. I think he's had sufficient time off. He said he expects to be 100%. LSU has really been remarkably healthy throughout this season. They did lose one of their top offensive linemen, Josh Dworsek, to a knee injury in the preseason camp, and there was actually some thought that he might be able to get back on the field for this game if he chose to, but he's applied to the NCAA for a 6th year of eligibility, and that they would probably be pushing it to get him ready for this game, and he hasn't played all season. So I think they're probably not going to do that. But if he were to suddenly emerge as a guy who's going to play in this game, that would be an interesting storyline. But for the most part, LSU should be as healthy as you could expect a team to be at this time of year.
Hey, Les, let's talk about the coaches. Got to love the Les Miles, Nick Saban dynamic here. First of all, what is your best Les Miles story, if you have one?
Oh, I don't know if I can pick one out, but he is seems to be exactly who he is publicly and on TV and in interviews. He just seems to be unusually genuine for a football coach. You know, so many guys just seem to be arrogant or tough-minded or put on a public face that you assume is not the person you see behind the scenes. I think he's probably exactly the same person away from us that we see on a daily basis. He's just a very easygoing guy. And, you know, one thing I'll say about him that I think might be of interest is that, this idea that the guy who chews grass and wears the goofy hat and isn't really the sharpest knife in the drawer kind of persona that has built up around him over the years, I think that's something he loves. I think he cultivates that.
Mm.
And he, I think, really enjoys the fact that people underestimate his intelligence and his ability as a coach. And I think he's a lot smarter not only as a person, but as a football coach than a lot of people give him credit for. He's really an interesting guy.
So is he a great coach or just a great recruiter? You know, I think before this year, some people might have thought just a great recruiter. He's kind of showing us some stuff this year. What's your take on that?
I think he is a very good, if not great, coach. And part of that is being a great recruiter, and part of that is having put together one of the best staffs in the country. That's one of the things that gets overlooked a little bit, is how he has modified his staff over the last 3 years. You know, after the last championship, they lost some coaches. Of course, Bo Pelini being most notable, going to Nebraska. And his initial idea of having co-defensive coordinators didn't work out. He went and got John Chavis after he got let go at Tennessee. He's one of the best defensive coordinators in the country. Brought in Gary Croton as his offensive coordinator, which didn't work out. And now he brought in Steve Kragthorpe, and unfortunately with his illness, that situation evolved where Greg Studrawa and Steve Kragthorpe are kind of sharing a lot of the offensive responsibilities. But that whole group, his immediate lieutenants, are outstanding. And so he's put together a tremendous staff. And I think if you just look, one, at the way his team performs when they have extra time to prepare, whether it be a season opener, a bowl game, or coming out of an open date, they've done extremely well. He's only lost one bowl game since he's been at LSU. That was a very close loss to Penn State in the Capital One Bowl on a muddy field. They've had lopsided wins against Georgia Tech and Miami and Texas A&M in bowl games, and the way they performed against Oregon to begin the season, the way they performed against Alabama in Tuscaloosa, you know, I think you have to say that he is one of the best coaches in the country at this point.
Now, talking about the defense, I was going to ask you who's the best LSU cornerback, but I want to twist it a little bit here. You could only have one. You're starting a team, one guy. Who you taking, Morris Claiborne or Tyrann Mathieu?
Wow, that's a good question. You know, it's kind of hard to answer. I guess the easy cop-out would be to say I'd start Tyrann because he's a sophomore and Mo is a junior who's probably going to go into the NFL draft. But, you know, the difference between the two is I think Claiborne is a more of a pure cornerback. He's got ideal size for a cornerback. He's bigger than Tyrann. Play in and play out, he's more of a shutdown corner. Tyrann is more of a dynamic player, not necessarily as good at a shutdown corner, even though he can play good man-to-man coverage. A lot of his big plays come as a nickel back, blitzing and kind of roaming in the secondary as sort of a safety. And they're both very good on special teams. Tyrann, again, probably a little more dynamic on punt returns. And Morris, a little less flashy, but very good as a kickoff returner. So, you know, they're both outstanding in very different ways. But I think Mo Claiborne, if he enters the NFL draft, is going to be a high number one draft choice and a really good player for a long time to come. And I'm curious to see how Tyrann evolves over the next year or two, because he's still a young guy who has some maturing to do, but he's a dynamic talent. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I'll take either one on my team. I got
either
no problem.
One.
So, you know, breaking down this game, I have not made a pick yet. I'm leaning towards LSU, and I think it's really going to be largely because of the same reason why they won the first game. I think their special teams is a lot better. And Brad Wing, I mean, when you can talk about all the great players, all the great talent on the team, it might come down to the young punter just flipping the field. What do you think about the special teams? Do you think that Tyrann Mathieu can get crazy long punt returns against Alabama like he did against Arkansas and against Georgia? And is it as big of an advantage for LSU as I'm making it out to be, just special teams in general?
Well, yeah, I think special teams is a big advantage for LSU. I would be shocked if Tyrann had a big punt return against Alabama, because I think Nick Saban is too smart to give him an opportunity. So I would think they would either kick it out of bounds or kick it so high and sacrifice a few yards on distance so that he would have to fair catch it. I was stunned when Georgia punted to him a second time in the SEC championship after that first one, and he nearly broke another one with what was probably his most dazzling run of the season, even though it didn't wind up in the end zone. So I think they'll neutralize Tyrann to a large degree just because it's a strategically the smart thing to do. But you're right, Brad Wing is a rare, if not unique, talent as a punter, and he gives LSU a big advantage over almost any team they play. Obviously, LSU's place kicker was more efficient in the first game, and that's been the case all season long. Drew Alamon's only missed two kicks. Both Alabama kickers have struggled at times, so I think that's another advantage for LSU. I don't think Alabama's coverage teams have been all that great, and LSU puts a huge emphasis on that. Matthew and Claiborne and other key players in the coverage teams, and they're outstanding there. They've given up 6 punt return yards the entire season, which is one of the more unbelievable stats you'll come across. So, yeah, I would agree that LSU has a definite advantage on special teams. I also think that Alabama has probably been putting in an inordinate amount of time working with their place kickers on field goals, getting ready for this game.
If you look at the LSU defensive strategy coming into this game the next time they play the rematch, you see them focusing most of their attention on Trent Richardson and stopping the Alabama running game?
Yeah, I think that's where it has to begin. Richardson is so good, and he's so important to their offense, and he makes things so much easier for A.J. McCarron if he's able to get off early. And I think that's where LSU's primary focus has to be. You know, in the first game, LSU did a good job with Richardson against the run. They held him, I think, to 83 yards and 20-something carries, and most importantly, kept him out of the end zone. But they let him get loose on a couple of swing passes, which was kind of remarkable. This is, you know, probably the biggest attention-getting running back in the country, and LSU managed to lose track of him 2 or 3 times during that game. So I think they'll be more prepared for the dump passes to him. Alabama fooled them with the play they ran out of a couple of formations they hadn't done before. But I think that's where it all has to stop. They want to get them into a situation where they expect A.J. McCarron to throw the ball so that they can blitz him with a variety of blitzes John Chavis has. So if they can contain Richardson and force McCarron to throw when he's not real comfortable doing it, I think LSU's defense can have a huge night. But that's really difficult to do because Trent Richardson is a tremendous running back.
Okay, Les, we want to thank you for coming on, but before we let you go, we'd love to get your prediction, your thoughts on this game, LSU-Alabama Part 2. What do you think?
Well, I think it'll be similar to the first game in that it'll be very close. It'll be a hard-hitting, physical, defensive game. I do think we'll see a little bit more scoring, not a shootout by any means. I do think LSU is a slightly better team, and I think it'll show up in terms of something like a 20-10 final.
Wow, okay. You can follow him on Twitter at Les East and read him on theadvocate.com. Thanks again. We really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks. Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Jay Darren Darson and I will be back on Thursday with our prediction, our preview. And until then, have a good one, everybody.